All right, folks, we don't have a lot of time today. Al is a very busy man. But this is This
hurry,
Week in Mormons.
Hurry the ship.
This is This Week in Mormons. We are going to bring you Mormon news. We are going to bring you comedy and love. All of these things.
This is the week of Mormons. In Mormons.
All of these things are happening. But we have a bit of a perfect storm this week as far as scheduling. So we're going to do what we can. Make it all
work. It is fabulous. Have you heard of scheduling conflicts? Well, that is what my life is.
Mine too. I can't.
Jeff, how have you been? How have you been?
I'm doing great. I went to the temple last night and I loved it.
Oof. Oof.
Let me tell you, I love that new film. This was the third time I viewed the new film.
And yeah, tremendous. I'm better the second time?
Better the third time because we missed our last turn. It was when I got all sick and my voice was messed up. My wife and I try to go every 3 weeks. So 3 weeks ago, I was all messed up. We tried to make it up and just do it the next week, but just stuff didn't work out, which is a great testament to the whole counsel we receive of just choose a fixed day when you go to the temple and build your schedule around that, because if you keep trying to squeeze it in somewhere else, it might not happen. So we went, and it was actually, I think after 6 weeks of not seeing the film, it was even a little bit newer and fresher, and I noticed other just inflections and stuff, and I loved it.
It was more HD.
Yeah. No, but seriously, it was nice. I mean, there's stuff I'm not going to share here on the podcast, but...
Oh, just tell me, Jeff.
No, because you'll get mad at me. We've been through this.
Oh, that's true.
But I'm not going to. No, it's fine. And it's honestly stuff we wouldn't talk about outside the temple. But if you go, really pay attention. I know a lot of it is just... it might just be a director's preference or this or that, you know, for how something is acted. But it lets you take pause and think. And analyze something, a story you perhaps thought you knew, but do it in a slightly different way. And I took some more stuff out of it this time around, which was great.
Well, I like the way you work it, Jeff.
Also, the card I took through, the guy had a nickname. Do we talk about people's names that we take? I don't know. But
yeah, you can. You can. So the guy was like Philly.
No, his name was Chester, and then it said in quotes, Chessie. I was very excited with this name. So I got to do the work for old Chessie. It was just funny.
That'd be great.
I was kind of laughing. It was just funny.
Dude, when I die, I hope that on the records they're like, Al, the closer, Dome.
The closer. Okay.
That's who this man was. Calls him the closer.
Well, all you need to do is just get the closer added to your church records, and it's done.
Man, all right. I'm going to make this happen.
You should.
I know a lot of people don't love it, but I'm doing it.
No. I think that you should do it. It felt good to do it too, because this card I got was there. I don't know if they're doing this in every temple now, but ours is pushing you to take. They have a little filing cabinet with cards from your stake, and so rather than just,
I feel like if they made the cards maybe like a fruit scent, I might be more prone to pick that card versus another.
Kind of like the maple syrup smelling Canadian currency from last year.
Exactly like right? that. What, uh-huh. Dude? What? And they just had two piles. They're like, this one will make you smell delicious and hungry the entire time. And this one smells like bland paper.
There we go.
Like, man, that's just good after-death marketing, I feel like. In your will, you should say any document with my name should be scented with a soft fragrance of maple syrup. And then people are going to be like, I want to interact with this dead guy. That's what I like.
No, mine will always smell like Acqua di Gio. It's a rule.
Jeff's entire life will be summed up in that one sweet fragrance
from
Kohl's.
I don't even wear Acqua di Gio, thank you very much.
What cologne do you wear, Jeff?
I've been a long time supporter.
I see you as an eternity man.
No, I've actually been a Ralph Lauren Polo Sport fan for a long time.
Oh, my.
Not Polo.
Strong move.
Polo itself smells just like musk or whatever, but Polo Sport has a very light, fresh smell.
Oh, yeah, I should look into that.
You should. Maybe I'm behind the times. If you have cologne recommendations for me, I will entertain them. Both you,
no,
Al,
I feel like,
or our listeners.
I've never smelled a cologne that I liked.
You need
Isn't
to
that
try.
Weird?
You should try
Curve. I'm like, this is awful. Jay-Z. Oh my gosh, you smell like urine. Like none of that's attractive to me. I don't like any of it. And I mean, I'll like if I have a girlfriend and she buys me some sometimes. Like I'll wear it when we're going out because I know she appreciates it. But like,
right.
I legitimately think I smell like urine when right. I wear it.
Okay.
It's not my favorite.
I noticed, like anything else, my cologne does smell differently to me after many years than I think it does to others.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And so, I make it a point to try and just. I mean, the only scent that touches his body is Axe. I mean, that's the only thing I trust.
Please tell me you're not serious.
No, I'm not serious. That's how great would that be if I was just totally sold on the body spray? If I was just the body spray man, I was like, listen, ladies, hold up, hold up, hold up. I can't go out yet. I got to go home and get gelled up. Then I go home, put the product in the hair, Axe body spray the entire body and an extra squirt in the armpits.
It's one of the worst creations in the world. I mean, I'm going to give you an Ed Hardy shirt, a thing of Axe, and just say, go for it. I have some spare Affliction shirts, too, if you really need them. I mean,
You really? Those are like $50. Jeff, no. I'd love an Affliction shirt.
I don't have those. I have clothing that I've been wearing for just years and years.
Well,
I don't buy new clothes.
I'm happy to be a part of this. A part of this game.
Basically, I buy decent pants for the sake of buying decent pants. But for shirts, I pretty much go to thrift stores and find awesome stuff. Except for the one I'm wearing right now, which is excellent. Behold,
wait,
Al.
You go thrift shopping?
Behold.
Oh, the wolf. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? That's your shirt. Everybody, well, I just described Jeff's shirt in a song.
Multiple wolves and the moon glows like an orb of destiny.
Oh, much like the orb of destiny. I see what's happened.
All good things. All good things. I'm a fan of it. My wife bought one. We bought them together. Before we remember.
Oh my gosh. Now, why does your wife have to go and ruin that? Because that's funny on you.
It's funny on her. We like bad wolf shirts.
It's not funny on both of you.
It is awesome.
No man wants to be seen with an ironic woman, but every woman wants to be seen with an ironic man. That's just the way it is.
We love to be seen this way together.
We do not want to see women in wolf shirts or kitty sweaters or anything of that nature.
Kitty sweaters.
Because it's too much.
It's too much.
Men don't want this, ladies. Do not be ironic. I demand it.
Al Doane, ladies and gentlemen, expert on women. He knows them all.
Yes. I know what men like in women. I've been a man for a number of years, and I like women.
But in the defense of someone who might disagree with you, that being
your wife, go on.
Yeah. You might be a man, but I feel like you are an atypical man. You are an alpha male. But
I doubt that. I doubt that very much.
I don't.
Jeff, I'm just saying, I know your wife will think it's adorable, and honey, don't wear it. Return that.
No, I
you're
love
a woman.
It.
Wear something classy with nice brown corduroy skin-tight jeans and some low-cut cleavage tops that BYU people hate. That's what men want. Jeff. I have
no words.
This.
All I know is many times you somehow get me in trouble with my wife on this show.
I know. I know that she's going to throw something at you.
I have nothing
this.
But love. I mean, when I made the eyebrow remark, I did. I never stopped hearing about it.
I love that I have this power that I can completely, like, you're not getting any dessert for the next 3 nights just because of this exchange. And you didn't even say anything.
I don't think this one's that bad, honestly.
You'll be surprised.
My lady is an intelligent woman, and she can see through your villainy.
Oh, well, that ruins everything.
I know. I'm sorry to tell you that. Other than that, my life is great. We had the primary program on Sunday. And for me, a self-avowed loather of children singing, it was excellent.
Did you help them sing?
We've rehearsed a lot during, singing time, of course. So
you weren't up on the stage, though?
No, we were up on the stage. But usually in the primary program, teachers basically serve as babysitters just to keep the kids from goofing around too much while they're up there and just kind of, send them along if it's their turn to say their little bit. Teachers don't do a ton, though, directly in the primary program.
What if we tried one time, no teachers on the stand? Has that ever been done?
It might have been, but it would have been a disaster. We've already got some kids who are way too squirrely.
I just want to see. I want to see them running rampant up on the stage. And, like, kids trying to police themselves and the big kid that tries to take over.
Well, in some ways you let them. There's one kid who has a trouble behaving, and they find sometimes it's better just to leave him, in the little, the little barrier that runs from along the sides of the podium, to make the whole stage area. And he'll just, like, lie on the floor there in between songs and just lie there. No one can see him because he's blocked from view. They just leave him there.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. I see.
Enough about me. Let's talk about you, then let's press on with our program.
We have things to do, people.
You're a busy man.
I've flown home to Missouri.
Oh, but
I'm back here.
You went on your great Northwest adventure.
Oh, I sure did. I went to the Redwoods. It was a Thursday afternoon, and I was feeling antsy. Me and a girlfriend discussed what we should be doing that afternoon, and we decided we should be on the road to the Redwoods. So we drove out of Salt Lake. And as I got to the Redwoods, I realized, which happened to be a good 14-hour drive.
Yeah, it's a long one.
I realized that I had to be back for my flight 2 o'clock on a Sunday. And so we drove out there, spent the night, finished the drive the next day, and got there in the afternoon. Spent the afternoon in the north part of the Redwoods. The next morning, we spent in the south part of the Redwoods. And then we started driving back, and we drove well into the evening. And then the next day, drove straight to the airport, dropped me off, and I flew here immediately thereafter.
That's why you're so... Wait, I don't get how that works logistically, because you went all the way up to Crescent City at some point, but...
Yeah, well, whatever. So Crescent City is where, like, the north part of the Redwoods are. So if you just map from Salt Lake City to Crescent City, that's where we drove. We went through Jebediah Smith State Park, which was cool. There's a nice little drive through there. Very fun. Huge trees. Big mamma jammas.
Yeah.
Then, here was the serendipitous moment for us. We went to the trees of mystery, where there's a great big 45-foot Paul Bunyan and a 39-foot Babe the Blue Ox. And there are these big mechanic awesome things, which then on the drive home, I heard 2 weeks ago, This American Life did a story on that exact place. And it was eerie. I looked around and said, how did they know?
Interesting.
How could they have known, Jeff?
Well, I'm very jealous of your quick little.
But it was awesome, man. Crescent City was great. And then on the way back, we were already down towards Kalikama or whatever that southern K city is.
Arcata?
And so the route that it took us back to Salt Lake City was through Reno. And so you take 299, Highway 299 out. And that was probably in my top three most fun drives in America.
299 doesn't go to Reno, but that's okay.
Well, it goes towards Reno, and then you connect with something else that goes to Reno.
Sort
eventually on to 80.
Eventually, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But that 299 drive was incredible because the leaves are turning right now and it's just like this great downhill for miles and miles and miles and hairpin turns. And so like as one who enjoys to drive, it was very, very enjoyable. So I love that.
Good.
Super fun.
It's a beautiful part of California and nobody lives there.
And then I've flown here and I've been building and we're doing cool business stuff. Mm-hmm. We do our reviews twice a year, listeners will know, in my businesses. And I gave raises this time, which is always fun. I love what I do.
Does this mean when I help you with videos now, you're going to pay me $8 an hour?
Jeff, you never help me with any videos. You'd be making over $10 an hour if you'd stuck
with
it. Yes,
and I have helped you with videos. How dare you? Not in making them. But
no, you were a transcriber. You were very good, but then you get bored easily.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't pay a lot. You work like 2 hours a week. $20 never motivated anyone.
Not really. I mean, except for people who don't live where I live or in America.
Yeah, poor people, you mean?
No, not sure.
It'll motivate poor people, just not you.
I guess. I don't know. I know what I'm worth.
So talk to me about Mormon stuff, Jeff.
Well, there are a lot of random things going on in the news this week, people. Many.
Did you know there's a race called Saints and Sinners Race?
My understanding is one sins, and then there's a bishop. It's like a Ragnar, but you stop to have a disciplinary council with each leg.
You run to a bishop and repent while your compadre goes on to the next
leg.
Yeah,
you hop in the van, you take off for your next one, and in transit.
So it was in Lake Mead National Park, which luckily is open as of Friday.
I thought they did this in Colorado.
We all have a little saint and sinner in us, Jeff.
Okay, so tell us about
this
race.
Come find out what you're made of, they say.
What is this race, though?
So it's a race that all the proceeds went towards the General Missionary Fund of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
That's cool.
So there's a lot of non-Mormons, non-church members that are just there to race. Having a good time, I'm assuming. It would be weird to show up for a saint and sinner race, though, and and be the sinner. I feel like that'd be weird.
Now, I don't know if this is legitimate, but there's one comment that talks about how at the end you actually have to choose between a finish line. One is called heaven and one is called heck.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that true?
I do know that.
I like it. That's funny. Well, good for them. Raising money. Yeah, and I think it's amazing if you get, you know, if you're getting non-Mormons to raise money for a Mormon cause, that's kind of an interesting get, I think you could say.
Yeah, fun.
You know what I'm saying, homie?
I know.
Other news that I loved. Last week, many of you saw this, I'm sure. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday. The church was a category on Jeopardy. Did you see this at all?
Yeah.
So on good old
being a Mormon, I felt like all of them were just throwaway questions. I wonder at times, like, if I were a potpourriist, if all of those questions would just be obvious to me.
Well, I'm sure. Well, like, what if they had a category about quilting?
I'd destroy that.
You know everything about it. Exactly. So
it's so true.
But I thought this was great. I mean, I caught this. We posted a video of the actual categories. They actually just ran the category, too. Everyone just plowed right through it. There was no bouncing between
other
categories.
They got real excited about that.
They worked it. The questions weren't particularly hard, but I think it was okay. They had to know what Deseret Industries was, so that was impressive. But it was great. I don't have a list of every single category that, or every single.
It was kind of fun. We found a guy that recorded it and got to watch through that. So
yeah, and you can do that. Of course, we'll put that up on our website again if you didn't catch it on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. But it was fun, cool to press. But the cool thing about it is this wasn't just happenstance. As it turns out, Jeopardy cooperated with the church over the summer through the church's public affairs wing and everything to actually create this category. So this was actually a combined effort with the church sort of helping Jeopardy ask the right questions, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Though if it would have been the right questions, it would have been something like, this boy, this young man, looking to find truth, prayed to God and was visited by a Heavenly Father in Jesus Christ. See, you could work in first discussion elements there. It'd be a lot better.
I like where this is going. I feel like this is a smart move.
So, anyways, I thought that was actually, it was kind of fun. It was a random thing to pick up on to see the church on Jeopardy.
You were so excited about this. I was very excited for you.
Pop culture is fun for the church, but
were you watching it live? Did it just happen? You were like, hello.
No, I didn't watch it live. A lot of the times if I'm sitting around, if I'm at the house at 7:30-ish, I might put Jeopardy on, you know, as background entertainment. No, I saw my cousin posted a picture of it on Instagram. I was like, ah, crap. Like, the one time I'm just sitting around working and I don't turn it on.
The one time I'm working at work.
Ugh. Well, no, I don't work at 7:30 p.m. Well, it depends what the work is. If it's this stuff, maybe. So, point is, good for them.
Oh. All right. So, I got a shocker. Meridian, Idaho also has looked the gift horse in the mouth, if you will. They were proposed a temple. We offered them a temple. A temple, a temple. A temple in Great Nauvoo. So in Meridian, Idaho, they were supposed to get there's a temple planned. 66,000 square foot.
A biggie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid size. And they're worried that it's going to rise so high into the air. 120 feet above the ground. It will be jetting up into the sky, so everybody definitely will be seeing it, said Joyce Cutbirth. Well, guess what, Joyce Cutbirth? We'd rather see that than your crummy trailer park, so shut it. Sorry, everybody, that you had to hear that.
Well, you know, I mean, well, it's a cool temple. It reminds me of Cardston. I mean,
David Cutbirth, obviously the husband, says it would be like having essentially a skyscraper right adjacent to your property, and your view is completely gone. Oh, your view of what? More Idaho? Shut it, David Cutbirth.
His view is like a lullaby. I'm just flying by. Oh, so
he's like, wait. Like a kite. Just love looking out at the dirt. That's what I want to see every
exactly.
day. No, you don't. You live in a suburb, you wiener.
For the listeners who don't know, just geography and such, which was completely understandable in this case, Meridian, Idaho is a sizable suburb of Boise. So there you go. So it's two temples in the same metropolitan area. And that's Western Idaho That's where all this is happening. They are not pleased.
Well, we're not pleased with the cup births.
No, or with any of them. I want this temple to be built. This is
so. There's a public hearing set for Wednesday
tonight. Yeah,
they're gonna be talking through this.
This is one of the cooler temple renderings I've seen in a while. So I hope they
here's what I predict: nothing will happen.
Well, they'll just plow right through. I mean, Meridian has tons of Mormons, so we don't have to make concessions here. We don't have to risk the community coming out against us. No, no. This is not the Phoenix Temple.
Shut them down.
We don't need another Phoenix Temple situation, people.
No, we really don't. We really do not.
But in positive temple news, the church finally, it feels like it's been going, being built for a very long time. The Gilbert, Arizona Temple had its open house and dedication dates announced.
Fun.
So isn't that fun? But it's not going to be for a little while, actually, pretty remarkable. They announced this temple in 2008. They broke ground for it November of 2010, so almost 3 years ago, which I guess is actually pretty typical time frame for temple construction. But there we go. The open house will be on middle of January, January 18th to February 15th, and then the dedication will be on March 2nd, so they still have a ways to wait. You'd think they'd announce it, and they'd tell you that the open house is going to be like in November or something, but no, no. Got to have one of those cultural celebrations. That takes planning.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a big deal for them. And the Gilbert Temple is actually the biggest temple the church has constructed in 17 years.
How big is it?
85,000 square feet.
No, I said, yeah, but I'd be like, it's so big. It's so big. If this temple were a... Never mind. Just dirty jokes.
I don't play your wicked...
How big is it, Jeff? This temple was so big.
Your wicked Never little mind. Game. 17 years. That would mean put us back in like 97, 98. So what does that mean? Like the Bountiful Temple?
Portland.
No, Portland's not as big. Maybe they're thinking Bountiful, Mount Timpanogos. Maybe that's the comparison there.
We should go tour the Gilbert Temple. I want to see it.
I'd love to. It'd be cool. I mean, I'll Instagram photos of the interior. It'll be great.
Road trip.
I wonder what do they do in those cases? I mean, I haven't been to an open house in a while, and obviously they don't want photos and stuff, but I think the last one I went to was in probably Newport Beach, and back then nobody had smartphones.
Yeah, well, you're still not allowed to take pictures, but if you
a
picture,
I know you can't take photos. Like, yeah, what do they do if they catch you? Are they crazy enough where they come over and watch you delete it from your phone?
No, they can't do anything.
Is
about
it like
that.
When they catch you taking a photo at a Broadway production, which they do not take lightly if they catch you, just so you know.
Yeah. Fair. I don't know. Anyway, let's see. What else do we have going on? We have the 50th anniversary of the dedication of the historic Liberty Jail.
Yes, the Sesqua.
This last Sunday.
The Sesqua.
This is pretty cool. Elder Ballard came out and spoke. So this is in my home region.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of fun. My mom went and took notes. Are you curious as to what was said, Jeff?
I am. I did not know she attended the performance, if you will. Yes, tell me.
Well, Elder Ballard spoke about the jail being where lessons needed to be learned, like humility.
Sure.
You know, often Joseph Smith was wondering why he was there, what it was, and he had to plumb the depths of his soul to become more humble. So often, I mean, just drawing the analogies back in or the parallels back into our own life of why bad things happen. I mean, sometimes we feel like we're super humble or whatever, but right. You know, until the Lord plumbs these depths, we are not known even to ourselves. Some interesting snippets. He thought if Joseph and Hiram were here, they would say to us, please don't be apathetic about the gospel that we died for. Which I could see that being a very real concern from people that like took it seriously enough to die for, because we are not asked to die for the gospel.
No.
Right. We're like, that's something that doesn't come up. And so it's easy for us to get, I mean, especially guys in situations like you and I, Jeff, where a lot of what we do is theoretical and we discuss and we talk about it and we try and see both sides of the table. And it's easy, I feel like, for us to sort of get an apathetic tone to a lot of this. It's a good reminder that this isn't just some academic pursuit. This is, you know, the whole reason we're here. So interesting.
Amen. Amen to that. Best thing I've. It's one of the best things you've said in a while, Al.
Oh wow! Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Other interesting things.
Al is just barreling through these.
But I am. Let's see.
Here, I've got a quick one.
What do you got?
A lot of people. I didn't even realize this happened. There was a major earthquake in the Philippines last week. Big old earthquake. All the missionaries are safe. That was the original news. That this is out by Cebu City in the Philippines, which is sort of central Philippines, I want to believe. And major earthquake, lots of destruction, lots of problems. Missionaries are fine. There's an article now running that says the missionaries just ran to safety. I don't know what that means. They felt an earthquake and they just like headed for the hills. They just floored it.
Said, they get they ran.
Yeah. And I ran so far away.
Anyway,
but 7.2 earthquake on Bohol Island. So that was, it killed 144
missionaries
people.
Missionaries are safe though? Everybody's safe?
Missionaries appear to be safe. Things appear to be fine. But yeah, 144 people have died.
Wow.
In the wake. I mean, that's thankfully, I'm not trying to have a Walter White moment when I say it could have been a lot worse. If you remember that episode when he speaks at the school. But at least it's only 144. We're not dealing with like a Haiti situation, which had 300,000 dead, you know. So
yeah, that's true. Let's see. There's one other. There was an article up on Modern Mormon Men.
Take me there.
Trip M, we call it, titled "The Things We Say."
Okay.
And I actually thought this was interesting because I hear this a lot, particularly out in Utah. Yes, Jeff?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I saw this article as well. Glad you're bringing it up.
No. Well, most of what I see is from Jeff, so that being said. Let's see. He said, the brother teaching the class said something during his discussion on the atonement that caused her to raise an eyebrow. What he said is something I had heard other people say before, too, which to me means it's a saying that has been around for a while. The teacher said, I'd rather have my son home in a coffin than for him to lose his virtue on a mission.
Now, you know what's actually interesting? I stumbled upon, I was actually working on a gospel study sesh email today.
Yeah.
And I happened to stumble upon what I believe is the original source of this sort of Mormon urban legend quotey kind of thing that we say. And it actually came from Heber J. Grant.
What did he say?
It wasn't those words, but he said basically it would be more preferable that my son or daughter perished than lost their virtue. No mention of a mission or anything like that. But that's what Heber J. Grant said, and I assume that we have paraphrased that and taken it to what Al just said.
I wonder if Heber J. Grant would say that same thing today. I wonder if... Like, I would suspect that that was, something said in sort of angst and not necessarily doctrinally sound. Because knowing people who have lost their virtue, I would much rather have them around because repentance is real and they're people. I would rather have them than not. I feel like a lot of times we just get caught up in that sort of Mormon vibe of like, you know, the striving for perfection, which Jeff, you and I have had some interesting discussions about as of late, where there is, I mean, it's almost a dangerous push towards perfection. And so with that push, though, we get to the point where, I mean, sacrifice their life in exchange for having them not made a mistake? No, that's not right.
Yeah, absolutely not. It doesn't make sense.
What struck this conversation for me previously, which is something we're going to talk about. Well, we'll talk about right now too. But there's a talk called the Little Factories Talk from Elder Boyd K. Packer.
It's funny you bring this talk up of all talks too. But
well, it's on our list of things to talk about, which is why I'm discussing it. So Jeff mentioned to me this week, he said, it's interesting, the church has de-SEO'd, or search engine optimization. They've taken all ability for search engines to find that talk away. So now on that page is just a video.
A video, or you can find the old PDF from
a link to the PDF,
from
right.
The pamphlet they made based off of it back in the day.
Which, the transcript is gone, the discussion is gone, what you normally find on a talk is gone. And he was like, that's interesting. And I got talking to a girlfriend of mine about this, and I was like, you know, I'm wondering why, and I wonder if it's not because the focus on you know, how bad masturbation is and pornography is and stuff in the early years of teenagers is often, I mean, a lot of teenagers are like, I mean, a lot of them screw up with that stuff. And if their first interaction, I mean, if all they're taught is that you don't do that, and then they do, they immediately, I mean, you feel like you're the only one making a mistake. You feel like you, there's no way that you can get out of this because you're so, what an idiot. And then you have all this kind of toxic doctrine around, well, you made that mistake and you can repent of it, but if you make that mistake again, it's as though you'd never repented. It's like, well, frick. I mean, like, I keep screwing up and I try and I get better, but I mean, you know, like struggling with sexual, I mean, like masturbation, for instance, right? I mean, that's something that it's realistic to understand that people will struggle with that off and on until they're married, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, we're not perfect. And the expectation, I don't think, is for us to be perfect per se. It's just that we're working on it, that we're learning, that we're getting better, right? So the understanding of the atonement is that we're improving and we're making it and we're getting there, not that we never make a mistake. And for teenagers, I wonder if I have very close friends and family who, through those teenage years, screwed up in that area, and it got to their head to the point where they left the church, right?
Right.
Which, what a dumb thing to leave the church over, because it's, you're not the only one struggling with it. So that, with that lens, right, you look at something like this where people have these weird sort of thoughts around how you should be living and what perfection is. And if I'm a good Mormon, then none of my children ever make mistakes. And if they did make a mistake, I'd rather them dead. Well, that's just dumb.
It's terrible. And what you're saying really goes back to President President Uchtdorf's, you know, much beloved talk from this past conference. The simple that, like, if you come here looking for perfect people, you will be disappointed. There is room enough for everybody. What's making me a little bit sad about that talk, at least seeing mainstream Mormon media, is his comment of, you know, doubt your doubts before you doubt your faith, is what's getting the most traction as in terms of memes and what have you. That's a great quote. I think it's very valuable. But for all of the content he has in there about the actual imperfection of the saints and of even church leaders, that's something that I think is super important. And even, you know, in this vein, like you said, Heber J. Grant or President Packer, whatever. I mean, the one thing is, we're not trying to open the floodgates to say that, great, now I can pick and choose, what I have decided is the divine stuff or just a more leader of the church screwing up, you know. But
do you have any other thoughts around the Boyd K. Packer talk? Like, what else would that have?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always been
de-emphasized.
It's
right?
been a controversial talk for a long time. If I am not mistaken.
Wait. Was it controversial, or is it just? I mean, that's the way it is.
Well, at the time, I think it was a little controversial. Yeah.
So those of you that don't know what we're talking about, this is Boyd K. Packer, who gave a talk and said, our bodies, like, it was in priesthood, and he said, our bodies are like little factories.
It was to young men,
and they don't need any help from you, speaking specifically around masturbation, right? So, like, you don't need to touch yourself, because a lot of psychiatrists and stuff had said, oh, no, that's healthy, you're supposed to. And he's like, no, the Lord built our bodies to kind of take care of that themselves, and the factories run in the nighttime when you're asleep, little boy.
Yeah, and actually, I actually found a cached copy of it right now, and so I did a Control-F for factory, and yes, here it all is before me. It's quite wonderful. I don't know.
So it's not so much that it's controversial. I think they just don't want to have that as a banner or mainstay, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, is it,
what do you think?
Are they trying to get rid of any reference? I mean, there's very, you know, opaque references to like wet dreams, if you'll forgive me for saying so. Is it just that they think it's a little weird, and it's a good point, of course, but I don't know. Is it the wonderful metaphor? I really don't know. I thought I remembered this talk also dealing with homosexual behavior and stuff like that.
But I don't remember that.
But as I'm searching, no, I don't see anything along those lines. And of course, I could see the church wanting to take that away. But the funny thing is, I haven't found other talks that have been de-SEO'd in this way, you know, because really it's, unless you find these cached copies of it, it's, you're not going to find it from the church. And they clearly want us to kind of just stay away from it, pressing on.
Yeah, well, the only thing I can think of is sort of the danger that is to teenagers who, I mean, it's hard as a teenager because you get so much focus around, like, people just trying to keep you from that heartache, right? Like, people who have been through it, who have screwed up and had to come back. It's so much easier if you just don't have to deal with it. And we focus on that to the point where if they do mess up in their head, it's, I mean, you can't come back. You can't. There's nothing you can do now.
Yeah. And that's an attitude we need.
I wonder if the Mormons, or like if the church wouldn't have more success with its youth if it's sort of if there was an aura of understanding through the teenage years of just like, well, I mean, do your best and like come talk to me though. Like we love you.
Yeah.
And then as they sorted it, I don't know. Well, I'm not a parent.
Well,
people, I have no idea.
I don't know. Maybe that's what this is about. Maybe this because they're aware that you know, attrition is growing, and maybe they're. This is one of those things to try to kind
it's
of change,
a theory.
Change the tone. I don't know. Could
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Another quick thing here, I guess. Mitch Main, who you might remember, is an openly gay member of the church, but he serves as the executive secretary, I believe, in his ward, and of course, San Francisco. This would never fly.
Of course, Jeff, really?
Of course, San Francisco. I'm just being stupid. But he writes a letter about sort of his feelings on how Mormon hearts are changing. With regard to gays and lesbians, it's an okay read. I don't agree with everything that he posits here, but I think it's a good thing to look through and actually.
I would agree that I think the sentiment though is shifting, where people are figuring out how to be more understanding and appreciative of the gay culture.
Yeah, and he references, you know, the letter from the pulpit that was read in Hawaii, which didn't come from the up top; it came from local leadership in Hawaii, but. He still believes that there's too much of sort of an us versus them mentality in trying to accomplish stuff. And in some ways, I can understand it, because look at the way he talks about this. He says, you know, what's troubling to him is an exhortation from Mormons, especially when we talk about religious liberty, and to, quote, protect individuals and small businesses from being required to assist in promoting or celebrating same-sex marriages. You could very easily offhand say, well, yeah, if someone's, like, not comfortable you know, performing a marriage for a gay couple, why should it be forced to, for example, if you were a minister or a judge, right? But of course, what would it be like if those same businesses just said, you know, no blacks? We would be upset. What if I went to McDonald's and it said no Mormons allowed? I would cry foul. Yeah. I would be upset about this. So, you know, it's good to look at our own history and think of some things and just analyze some things. And I like
it's actually interesting on that vein, Elder Ballard at the temple, or the prison, Liberty Jail.
Liberty Jail.
Commencement thing.
Yes.
He made a mention. He said things like marriage, the Lord told Adam and Eve to leave the garden and to multiply and replenish the earth. That can only happen one way, between a man and a woman.
Well, yes.
I mean, it's interesting. It's like we're still, I don't feel like the church is having to give up its ground on this in order for us as a people to be better. You know what I mean? Like, in order for us to love and to fight for rights and all of that stuff, I feel like we're finally coming to that point where the church is settling into a ground where they can stand their ground and be firm on this, right? We believe in marriage between a man and a woman, but we're also finding ways of supporting our gay and lesbian counterparts. Yeah. So,
and what's interesting at the end is he writes basically his version of a letter that he would love to see read from the pulpit. That's actually the most compelling bit of this piece, I think. So. Worth checking out.
So let's see.
Want to talk about the atheists and the billboards?
No, I want to talk about the Saratov approach doing quite well.
Okay, do it.
There's a movie about the Mormon missionaries in Russia that got kidnapped.
Yeah.
It's doing well.
It's made $500,000 on only 23 screens.
They could have made that on Kickstarter. So
over 2 weeks,
whining.
Which really, since I follow box office tracking, let's divide some numbers here. 23 screens. That's a pretty decent average, though. I mean, yeah, that's a $10,000 per screen average, which is very, very good. You know, a solid blockbuster will not even, you know, could reach that maybe. So it's a good per screen average. Good for them.
Oh, that's great. And it's being picked up in some non-Mormon centric.
I would like to see it, actually, but I don't believe it's playing. I haven't checked.
I will see it in the Utah.
Oh, good. Also, my turn, real quick. I know we got to finish up because I don't want Al to be stressed here. But atheists, they fear that Utah billboard companies fear the Mormon church. Now, the reason this is coming up is
Rocky Mountain Media hates Mormons.
Yeah,
yes.
It's because there is, and there's an American Atheists Convention, which kind of cracks me up because you're saying, like, I denounce religion and don't believe in it. But here I am, in a way, with my own social group believes in a very specific, you know, theory of life and why we're here, which in many ways turns atheism into a religion, I feel like. So, whatever. I mean, there's no one to worship other than your own intellect, but I don't know, whatever. So, they're having a convention in Salt Lake City, and they allege that they cannot get billboards put up because of fear campaigns from Mormons. Like, as in, billboard companies will get calls from headquarters and say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you promoting atheism? Yeah. That's what they think is going down. I just think it's, I put this on Facebook. I mostly think it's just knowing your market. It's not to say the market is perfect. I don't even think people would be upset about an atheism billboard, really. But I think the majority of the populace doesn't care. It's not really something that they want to get into and you know, for which they need publicity because they wonder, oh, yeah. I've been hoping this would come to town. Now I can go. No, it's bridal expos. That's Utah. Bridal expos and guns. And all those weird health billboards that, you know, say like, I wish daddy would have had a colonoscopy because now he's gone.
Oh, that's weird.
Those are all over.
Oh, that's weird.
Those are all over Utah. But the atheists are very displeased.
Let's see. Some of our final ones. On NPR, there's an article this week on sister missionaries speaking about how they're excited to share their faith at a younger age, speaking about dropping that down. In the comments, a lot of speculation as to why the church would do it. They're doing it to save the younger generation, to keep people from leaving the church, etc.
I don't think that's a negative at all. Of course that's what they're doing.
Nope. I agree. Yeah. Make them learn about the gospel younger. Yeah. We're all for it.
And don't let them lose that year, those years out of high school. I mean, obviously. The interesting post here from the Mormon history guy, who writes a lot of interesting pieces, sort of the history of the church and its relationship or opposition to pornography. Cool read. Not going to go through a lot of details right now. But you don't find it wasn't until the late 60s, during the great sexual revolution and cultural revolutions and stuff, that the first presidency put out a statement. This was during President McKay's era, and actually said, like, came down on porn and said, you know, this is the scourge of our time and we need to go after it. Before that, we didn't really address it very much, it turns out.
Which is interesting. I'm guessing that pornography maybe wasn't as big of a problem before that.
It wasn't, but they mentioned, it's interesting to read the first presidency letter that they put out there to talk about the ways that people see it in their time, like just from direct mail and stuff like that, you know, just saucy things showing up for Woolworths or something, whatever was around back then. For ZCMI, naughty.
Get scandalous.
Do you want to talk about the 95 Theses or just skip it?
Nope, we're out of here.
All right.
Jeff, it's been a pleasure.
And
everybody,
a pleasure.
Everybody, thank you for joining us on this fall afternoon.
Al, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
From the shadows of the Salt Lake Valley to the windows
of my heart.
Of your heart. Yeah, you can always reach us. Contact at This Week in Mormons. We love to get emails from you. That's my favorite thing.
Or
also,
yeah,
you should definitely go leave a comment at thisweekinmormons.com. Say hello.
Yeah, say hello. And go to facebook.com/thisweekinmormons to really keep up with our social media awesomeness, as well as twitter.com/therealtwim. And I believe it's also,
there can be only
you can
one.
Find us on Pinterest and, of course, find our YouTube page. We encourage all of these things. It'd be very nice. We also hope you'll keep an eye out for Sunday School Bonanza as we wrap up Doctrine and Covenants for the year. And sign up for our mailing list and Gospel Study Sesh.
It's been great. We're on fasting right now. A lot of fun.
Fasting's been a good topic. And we've been archiving previous ones. So if you're late to it, whatever, you can find copies of it all on our website.
Much love, everybody. Have a great week.
Thanks, Al. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you taking the time. And this has been This Week in Mormons for the week of October 23rd, 2013. We'll see you later.
Do-do-do, do-do-do, do-do-do. Even
like it